Hello and welcome to What Monkeys Do. My name is Morten Kamp Andersen and this is a podcast about what it takes to make a change and make it stick. In this episode of What Monkeys Do, I speak with David Allen, who is the world's leading expert on personal productivity. Why productivity in a podcast about change? Well, there are often two things which prevents us from making a change. The first is not prioritizing what is most important to us. And the second is not having a clear mind. That is, we have too many thoughts in our head. David Allen has made a system called Getting Things Done. It involves 5 steps. 1, capture all of your tasks. 2, clarify what kind of task it is. 3, organize your tasks in projects, calendar, and next items. 4, reflect through regular reviews. And 5, engage in your tasks. Why this is the world's most used system, why it can help us focus on what is most important to us, and why this can help us change. Well, let's find out in this episode of What Monkeys Do. My guest today is widely recognized as the world's leading authority on personal and organizational productivity. His 30 years of pioneering research, coaching, educating some of the world's highest performing professionals has earned him Forbes recognition as one of the top 5 executive coaches in the United States. Fast Company has called him one of the world's most influential thinkers in the area of personal productivity, and Time magazine labeled his first book, Getting Things Done, as the defining self-help business book of the decade. He's the author of 3 books, The Phenomenon and international bestseller, Getting Things Done, but he's also written Ready for Anything and Making It All Work. He's also, by the way, one of the few non-celebrities with over 1 million followers on Twitter. Welcome to you, David Allen.
Thank you, Morten. Thanks for the invitation. Glad to be here.
Of course. Yeah, I really look forward to this. So What Monkeys Do is a podcast about change. And change is often about focusing your time and your energy on something new. And you've invented the most widely used personal productivity methodology there is, but there'll be some of our listeners who don't know what Getting Things Done is about. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself and about what Getting Things Done is about?
Sure. Let me start with the second part. What Getting Things Done is about is just the best practices that I've discovered over the last really 40 years now about how do you stay clear when you've got a busy life full of volume and velocity of things coming at you, decisions you have to make, and being able to surf on top of that instead of feeling overwhelmed by it or having that create what I now refer to as the ambient anxiety of so much to do, not sure you're doing the right thing, and being able to stay clear really more about than anything else. And so I just discovered I didn't really make them up, Morten. I recognize the best practices we do that actually gets our head clear. Without having to complete all the things you think you want to do, without having to finish your to-do list. But it's really about being appropriately engaged with whatever all your commitments are. So I just discovered the very specific both principles and then practices about how do I recognize my commitments? How do I clarify them? How do I make sure I create a trusted external brain so I don't have to trust my mind to remember, remind, prioritize, or manage relationships, because it didn't evolve to do that. It doesn't do it very well. But external brains do, if you do them right. And so I just discovered how to do that. And I got there because I kind of discovered the value of and practical value of clear space early on. Getting a black belt in karate, you have to learn how to get clear fast. you don't want 2,000 unprocessed emails hanging around your psyche if you're jumped by 4 people at once. So, staying clear, I mean, all the mindfulness people to focus on your breathing, I learned that 40 years ago in the martial arts. So I had an attraction to clear space. Also, I'm a freedom kind of guy. I love to be spontaneous, follow my intuitive hunches, etc. But as my life, as I started to take all my different careers and professions and jobs I'd had and then melded them into just my consulting practice back in 1982, I discovered my life got more complex and complicated. And I said, wait a minute, how do I stay clear? Because I love clear amidst all that. And so I started uncovering these techniques for myself first. And then it turned out they worked so well to create more clarity, more focus, more space to focus on meaningful things. Turned around and used those with my clients produce the same results. Those same practices produced exactly the same thing, more stability, more control, more of a sense of, now it's easier to know what my priorities are, easier to leave work earlier. You know, it's easier to spend more time, be more present really with my life and all the good value that that can bring. And then that got discovered by somebody in the big corporate world. They said, wow, we need that in our whole corporation. Can you design a training around that? So I did. It worked successfully. And so from 1983 on, I spent literally thousands of hours training hundreds of thousands of people, coaching hundreds and hundreds, and spending thousands of hours desk side with some of the busiest and brightest folks you'd ever meet on the planet, actually implementing and refining this methodology. I didn't really realize what I'd realized until I finally, you know, 25 years later, it took me that long to figure out that what I'd figured out was unique and nobody else seemed to have done it, and that I better write the manual. So that's when I wrote Getting Things Done.
So one of the key fundamentals of this methodology is that you need to get everything out of your head, because that's a bad place to store it. I think you have a saying, something like your brain is for making ideas, not for keeping them. So it is to get everything out of your head.
You have 50,000 thoughts a day. I defy anybody to write down 50,000 things a day. You're not doing that. But anything that's potentially meaningful that you think you might still need to decide or do something about that you can't finish in the moment it happens, that's what you need to capture. So all of that needs to be out of your head. If you don't, it spins around in your head. So you have a, you know, concept of monkeys. And believe me, talking about a monkey in your head, oh, I need cat food. I need to hire vice president. Should we adopt? Should we get divorced? Should we, you know, yada, yada, yada. And those things will spin like crazy and create that ambient anxiety that you can't find one single source for it. But you've started to use your head as a really bad office, you know, to try to manage all that. It's a terrible executive.
I mean, one of the things that I discover when I lay in bed and I have to say, oh, I have to remember that tomorrow. I have to write an email to him and so on. If you actually have written that down somewhere, your mind will not be frantically trying to remember that all the time.
As long as you trust, you'll see where you wrote it down at an appropriate time. So that's why there are several steps to making sure you get clear. You have to capture it, clarify what specifically you need to do about it, and then park it in some trusted system. And the trusted system means I've got to put it in a place I'll trust I see it, like I trust I see my calendar to see that I need to be talking to David Allen today. And then you need to step back and make sure you're looking at all that context and content, you know, appropriately, so that you feel a lot more comfortable about what you're doing.
So without going into all of the nitty-gritty, it's essentially a methodology. There are five steps, and one of them is to capture everything. So it is to get things out of your head and capture it. And then it is to decide, is it something I can take action on? Is it a project with multiple steps? And essentially creating a methodology around all of the stuff that you need to do. And you say that you came up with it or you discovered this over a long time. And there's obviously been time management systems before that. Why does this have the impact that it did?
Probably because I never had any formal or traditional education in business psychology or time management. So yes. I had absolutely no preconditions myself about what you needed to do to stay clear while you're, you know, in a busy life. So I kind of came to this from the street, you know, and just my own experience with it. And then to find out that, well, a lot of the time management stuff says, well, you need to set your priorities. You need to have ABC. You need to create a daily to-do list and a lot of other things like that. They just frankly didn't work. You know, they work if you had nothing else to do but organize your life that way. Most people are a lot busier than that. And quite frankly, you know, you have as many priorities as you have different things you do today.
Yes.
What this methodology does is it starts with where you are, not with where you should be. And most of the time management stuff starts with where you should be. But if your day-to-day ordinary life is feeling out of control and unfocused, trying to focus on the future and something, you're just going to create more guilt and frustration. It doesn't mean you shouldn't focus on that. No, those are great things to focus on. But just if your attention is being grabbed by stuff that you're not managing appropriately in your day-to-day, then good luck, you know, trying to do the other thing. The higher horizon stuff, as I've identified them, you know, why are you on the planet? You know, what's your ideal scenario in life and work in 5 years from now? And what are your, you know, what do you need to accomplish over the next 2 to 3 years? And what are all the things you need to maintain in your life, like your health and your finances and your relationships? What are all the projects you have about all that? And then what are all the things you need to do about any of that stuff? Well, you got six horizons of commitments that everybody has, whether you're conscious of them or not. And all of those are creating this incredibly complex variety and multiple levels of stuff. Most people don't realize how complex their life is. They've allowed themselves to create in terms of what they've done. So what this methodology does is just say, look, let's start to get all of that under control. Mm. Not control like control the weather or your kids or your boss. I mean, good luck. I'm talking about having something under control like your car or a meeting or your desk or your head or your kitchen. Have it under control enough so that you feel like I'm in a stable situation where it gives me the freedom to then focus appropriately as I need to focus. So as I say, a lot of people shouldn't be setting goals. They need to clean their bathroom. It doesn't mean a goal's not a good thing. It just means if your bathroom is feeling out of control or your kitchen, you know, you're going to have a tough time focusing appropriately on the goals you need to set.
So many people, they would probably have an email, you know, where they've put some flags or some priorities there, then they will have a to-do list. And that's, for many people, actually the crux of how they organize their lives. As things come in, they'll put something on their to-do list and maybe that's it. But, well, actually, you're suggesting that you should sit down and take a couple of days off, maybe even, or a day off, and just write everything that is on your plate to get it out. So all of the projects you may have, all of the things that needs to be done in the house, all of the people you need to call, all of the things that you need to do, all of that needs to come out once and for all. What's the purpose of that process?
Empty your head. If it's still banging around in there, it's because you're not appropriately engaged with it. So what you need to do is identify the content that you need to start to appropriately engage with. Why is your mom's birthday on your mind? Well, I don't know what we're going to do. Great. What's your outcome? What are you trying to accomplish? Well, we need to celebrate mom's birthday. Fabulous. Now you got a project. What's your next step? Oh, God, I don't know. Yeah, that's right. So the problem is most people's to-do lists create as much stress as they relieve because they're reminding them. It's still an incomplete list of the stuff that has their attention. And not only that, whatever they captured is still unclear in terms of what they're going to do about it. So it just reminds you have decisions to make you haven't made yet. You got more thinking you need to do. You haven't finished your thinking. So it's still spinning in there. So now you got something out of your head, but it's still banging around in your head because it's still reminding you there's more to think about and more to decide.
Because the funny thing is, because I went through that process and I probably came up with about, I can't remember, 70 or 80 projects. And a project in this terminology is essentially a thing you need to do where there are multiple steps for it to be completed. So if it's my mom's birthday, I need to talk to my sisters about maybe buying a present together. Then we need to find out what she wants. Then it is to buy it. Then it is to arrange a time to go and meet her and give her the present. And I had probably about close to hundreds of those projects.
Most people, by the way, have between 30 and 100.
Wow. I mean, it's amazing. And you would think that that would create even more stress, complexity, or uncertainty. Can I even do all of that? But it had the reverse effect. That was the funniest thing, was that it actually gave a sense of, that's what I need to do. Now I just need to look at it and decide what to do and what not to do and in what order. And then that actually took away stress. That was an amazing experience, by the way.
Everybody listening or watching this at some point has felt overwhelmed or confused and sat down and made a list and felt better.
Yes.
And nothing changed in their world.
Yes.
What changed was the most important thing, which is how they are engaged with their world changed, which is what you just described in a little more detail. But even in a very basic, mundane level, making a list about anything, whether that's stuff you need to buy at the store or whether it's stuff to deal with your mom or all the stuff you got to do in terms of the new job that you've got, or now you've got to work from home because of the pandemic. And what are all the things I need to deal with? Any and all that. You know, if you leave it in your head, you'll take as much cognitive real estate thinking about, I need to buy a desk as, how am I going to get my kids into the right education for the next 2 years?
Yes.
And they'll take up the same space if it's just in your head, because your head does not know how to calibrate all that stuff appropriately. Your conscious mind does. That's why you need to make it conscious and objective. And then you just describe that process that you went through. And believe me, I've spent many thousands of hours with some of the best, brightest, busiest people you'd ever meet, having them go through exactly what you just described. And it usually takes somewhere between, for most people, it takes 1 to 6 hours just to identify all the stuff that had to have attention on. And then the rest of at least a couple of days, usually, to go through each one of those and make the appropriate decisions so they don't have any more thinking they need to do about them. And then organize some sort of an appropriate list manager, you know, that they can keep the list of reminders of the people to call, errands to run, things to bring up at the board meeting, projects they need to keep track of until they're done, et cetera. that's what the process is. And it, you know, what's strange at Morton is, as you know, it's not rocket science unless you're in a rocket. These are not behaviors that people don't already know how to do. This is not a foreign language or some new technology. Everybody knows how to write stuff down. Everybody knows how to recognize, wait a minute, I've got my attention on that. What's that? Mom's birthday. Should we adopt? Hire the vice president. Get a new mobile phone. Grabbing those, that's not hard to do. What's difficult is most people don't realize they should, and they just let them keep banging around in there. And there's no sense of past or future in that thing. Talk about a gerbil or a monkey running around in your head because they don't stop. And when they show up consciously, they go subliminal, but then they show up consciously at very inappropriate times. You'll wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning about something you can't do anything about at 3 o'clock in the morning, lying in bed. Your brain, it doesn't have one. It's not very smart.
And one thing is sort of creating an overview of what you need to do. Obviously, it's also a system that you need to maintain. And there are different processes. Once a week, you sit down and do your weekly review, so to speak. You look at your calendar, what's coming, what have you just been through, what's, you know, and so on. And you also have a monthly and quarterly review. How closely would you suggest that people should follow this exact process? Or how much should they add their own flavor to it? So when I read blogs, for instance, on how people are using this, many are adapting it to their own preferences. How much, from what you have seen, have people benefited from following it strictly or adapting it themselves?
Depends on what you mean by it. When you say follow it specifically, if you say keep it out of your head, absolutely. I don't care, but I don't care how you do that. Write it on your arm. You know, hire 12 people to follow you around and talk it to them and have them keep track of it and remind you at the right times. I mean, frankly, I don't care how you do any of that, but the principle is absolutely inviolate. If it's in your head, it's in the wrong place. So how you customize keeping it out of your head, that's up to you. All those things that you just mentioned were, over all the years, I just tried to curate basically what are some of the typical best practices that allow the typical kind of, you know, mid to senior level professional, actually anybody with a busy life, how do they keep their head clear? You know, there's only one criterion. Do you have any attention on anything you can't finish right now that's distracting you from whatever you're trying to be present about? If you don't, you've done it. I don't care how you get there. I just discovered the best way to get there. And don't kid yourself if you think you got a clear head simply by doing mindfulness, focusing on your breathing. You know, that's good stuff to do. I do that. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. But if you don't handle the things that you've got commitments about, that's why you have to keep working on focusing on your breathing, because you keep thinking about cat food and the vice president you need to hire. And should you adopt, you know, why don't you get that stuff off your mind so it gives you more space to do what your consciousness is better to do, which is to take advantage of meditative space or reflective space, be able to then be creative or be strategic or just be present with whatever you're doing. Those are the golden goodies.
I think it is about finding, you know, how this works for you, and also exactly with, you know, whether you write it on a piece of paper that you carry in your pocket all the time or on your iPhone or whatever you do, that really doesn't matter, just as long as it works for you, I suppose. I think what helped me a lot, obviously, was to get out of my head, but also to break things down into actionable steps, because sometimes we have a big piece like hiring a new vice president, you know, is a big chunk of steps, actually. And it can be confusing and difficult to actually take action on it unless you can break it down. And I think that was probably the most valuable. I don't know if it came specifically from this, but generally when I taught myself to break things down, I learned a lot from that.
And you don't actually need to break everything down to all the different pieces. Some things you might want to do, but the main thing is, what's the next thing I need to do? It's the very next piece. And that's where people get hung up, is because they think they have to think through the whole thing before they decide the next thing to do. Well, what do you need to do to figure out all the stuff? Oh, maybe I should set a meeting with Bill. Yeah, great. How are you going to do that? I should send him a meeting invite. Fabulous. How long would that take? Oh, I could just do that in a second. Do it. And suddenly you have this big project in motion, because you stop freaking yourself out about everything that has to be done. You just figured out, you just brought it down to, well, what do I need to do to start to move the needle on this? And that's the critical breakdown that you need to finish your thinking. Indeed, you might want to spend 4 days with 16 people in a big room with whiteboards to flesh out a major project, sure. But you better have very specific next actions you need to do to set up that meeting, and very specific next actions once you walk out of that meeting about what needs to happen by the moving parts. So it's the next action thing that is so magical. So those are two of the key components. I know you're probably going to ask, well, if somebody's just getting started, or what are the key elements of this stuff? Basically, get the stuff out, get as much as you can out of your head, and decide the next actions on any of those you intend to actually do something about. And then step three would be make sure you park reminders if you can't finish the action in the moment you decide it. Have some sort of list manager. And review and reflect on all of that stuff as best you can on some consistent basis. You're going to be way ahead of the planet if you do any version of that.
Okay. I like the fact that you are so open about this is a methodology. I've seen that work for many people, but if you have another way of doing it, go about doing that. I mean, that's really cool. There might be some people who say, well, I'm not a structured type of person. So this sounds like it's very structured. It sounds like you need to get things out of your head as soon as you have it there, but I don't have that sense of structure around me. What would you say to them?
Well, they wouldn't even ask that question if they were unstructured. They couldn't even get out of bed if they were unstructured. Just ask them what they really like to do. I like to fish. I like to paint. I like to play the flute. And they, well, show me what you use when you fish. And they open their tackle box and it's neat as a pin. I like to play the flute. Show me your music and where do you play? Oh, and it's all structured. I like to paint. Show me your paint brushes and show me where you, oh my God. See, usually you don't think about structure when it's something you have to do something you love to do. If you love to cook, are you highly structured in your kitchen? No, I just love to cook. Let me go see your kitchen. The spices are here. The butter's here. You know, the pans are down here. It's not all over the place, unless you're just a young guy in college, in which case you could just know where the salt is and everything else is a mess. But you'll be as structured as you need to be to get what you want to be doing. So, you know, people say, I don't like structure. I say, what do you think about the center line in the road out there? I think that's a good thing or a bad thing. Is that a constraint that you feel, oh my God, I'm in jail. I have to stay on this side of the road? No. See, structure is simply creating the limitations that are required to achieve the result. You only need to be as organized as you need to be. I don't like having to be organized. I just get as organized as I need to be so I don't have to rethink anything. And so I can find stuff when I need it. You know, that's kind of duh. I understand what people, because they look at this and they see the result of 25 or 30 years of my work all put into one manual. I said, look, if you really wanted to do this, here's the best practices, you know, from thousands of hours and thousands of people, you know, actually applying this process. And so it can seem like a little overwhelming or daunting, I think. And it may look like it's a little over, but how overstructured is it to recognize stuff that has your attention? How overstructured is it to make a decision about what I need to do about it and what I need to keep track of till it's done? How overstructured is it to say, well, I need to keep track of this somewhere so my brain doesn't have to keep reminding myself. I can trust my system to remind me. How overstructured is it to step back and say, gee, by the way, where do you need to be for the next couple of weeks? And what's up? When people say this is too much structure, I go, I understand what you're saying, because most of the structures in the old time management trainings and all that stuff were way overstructured and unrealistic. And they didn't have anything to do with the flexibility we all need. That's why my radical thing back in the early 1980s was the daily to-do list don't work. You know, they just don't work. Your life is too much of a surprise. You need to be a lot more flexible. But you need a total life to-do list all the time so that you can then make good choices about it and not feel guilty that you didn't do the 25 things you thought you were going to do on Monday.
Yes. And I guess what was also back in the old days when it was pen and paper was that you had to carry it over to another day, or you had to, there was a lot of, you spent a lot of time writing things down. Now it's much easier with different apps or, you know, different reminders that you have. I think technology has actually helped a lot in that way.
Well, it's helped and hurt. It's helped probably more than it's hurt, but there's still the downside. The black hole of the technology is the new. Well, give me a new app that'll fix this. I didn't work that one. Well, that didn't work. Give me the new. And the new didn't work. So give me the new. And you think that's going to work. If you get this methodology, you can make anything work. You know, as you and I said before we started this, you know, recording, I use the time design or the time system out of Copenhagen. Ole Baird is a friend of mine. You know, the guy who designed that thing. And he was one of the most coolest guys. He's still around, by the way, in Denmark.
Yes, 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 yes. Yeah. I used it as well. I really liked it. And my life was a lot less complicated at that time, by the way. But then it became very complicated to maintain.
Well, that's why we said that the paper-based system to me is the best organizational tool for your life, simply because it's all in your face. You can see the whole gestalt in a few minutes or seconds. You can flip to wherever you want to go, see its relationship to everything else very well in a gestalt. Almost impossible to do that on the computer. It's very hard to do. You don't have the same, you can do discrete things in a very cool way, but you can't see the whole game very easily. That's why, by the way, we've made two major attempts with some of the brightest people on the planet to do GTD apps, and none of them worked. You needed much more of the technology to really make it work the way it really needed to work. It wasn't there. Still not there.
I need to ask you about that, because that was one of my things. Why is there not an app? I mean, because it, on one hand, it seems very logical that there would be an app, because there is a methodology and there should be a way to put that into an app. And I have no doubt that there'll be a huge demand for such an app.
No, there's no demand. There's no demand. Everybody who kind of got GTD and the whole life hack movement was created, they're probably, last count, you know, years ago, there were over 300 apps built on the GTD model. And they're all just list managers. Tell me a list manager, when you write down something, it automatically says, gee, is there a project about this? And by the way, what's the next action? And if there's a project on it, you click on that, it automatically pulls up whatever you use for project thinking, and you've defaulted already that you're going to spend 2 minutes brainstorming any new project. And you put that in there, and then before it turns off, say you want to spend more time thinking about this, or what's your next action, right? And then it parks it automatically in where you need to keep track of that. Who even thinks they need that?
In a previous episode, I spoke with Jim Lohr, and he talks a lot about managing energy rather than managing time. And as an example, you know, also in some of his writing, he says, well, you can spend 2 hours with your family, but if you're mentally somewhere else, then what quality of time is that with your family? So instead of focusing on the time, focusing on your energy and your mental focus, etc. He had a thought about spending a little bit too much focus on time. That was may not be always the best way of finding out how you should allocate your energy on a day. What are you thinking about that?
Well, time's a critical component, like space is. You can't manage time. You don't mismanage 5 minutes and come up with six or four and a half. Time just is. So it is true. I don't think about time. I just think about where's my attention. I think about time called how much time are you and I going to spend, and then, you know, what will I do when I finish that, and what do I need to do that's going to take a certain amount of time for me to do that I have a commitment about. So time's a critical component, much like money or space is. And all those are just resources that you utilize, so you don't ignore that idea. Why would you even think about time unless you're some sort of philosopher, like the German philosophers Heidegger and, you know, people like that, you know, thought about stuff like that. And I thought, yeah, I'm kind of too lazy to go down that track, you know, to even worry about that stuff. Time's really an experience, and it really is quality more than quantity. I mean, that part I would certainly agree with. And when people say you should allocate a certain amount of time for certain kinds of things, yes, that's true, but to a limited effect, because quite frankly, you know, I think your success comes from following your intuitive hunches about what to do at any point in time. It's hard to listen to those intuitive hunches or recognize which ones are the ones to follow unless you're clear enough in your head that you're not distracted by all the other stuff that gets in the way and takes up cognitive real estate. So that's why implementing, you know, the GTD or my methodology, it just helps you get a lot more clear space to think strategically, to think about where I need to spend my time, and I plan as little as I can get by with. The only time blocks on my calendar are when I've made external commitments with other people to keep that agreement. Otherwise, I leave my space totally open. Now, there are times if you're in a very, very busy life, especially when other people have access to your calendar, and you know you need 2 good hours to finish that business plan by Friday when you have to turn it in, and you look down your calendar, you go, God, if I don't block that in, it ain't going to get done. And so you then need to make an appointment with yourself. I couldn't agree more. So in that regard, you need to be aware of time and time blocks. And there are times when time blocking is a good idea, but don't overdo it. As soon as you block one of those, you'll undo your own agreement with yourself faster than anything. And then you don't trust yourself. And then you don't trust your calendar. You don't trust what's a real thing versus what's a, gee, I'd like to thing. You know, I don't know if you know it, but one of the first time management systems that showed up physically in the US was the day timer. And the day timer showed up in 15-minute segments. Why? The guy who invented it was a lawyer, and he had to charge by 15-minute increments. So that's, you know, that suddenly became, of course, I need to keep track of the time I spend because that's money. Every 15 minutes gets charged that kind of money.
I know that your methodology is labeled as a productivity tool, but I think what can be misunderstood by that is that then you just need to produce more. Then you just need to be more effective. Then you just need to run faster. You take more in, so to speak. But I don't think that's the benefit of this program at all. I think it is actually, you know, sitting down thinking, what are my long-term big goals? What do I want to achieve really? And then link that to and creating space to do that. So it's actually making your most important projects your most important project, so to speak, and having a system around that. So I think there is a lot of focus on time and a lot of focus on productivity. But for me, it is actually doing the right things rather than do more things.
Productivity just got a lot of baggage as a word. Everybody's being productive right now. You're being productive doing what you're doing. Everybody's producing whatever they've got. When we say more productive, that just means I want to get more out of the time and energy I'm putting into it, or I want to get the same thing with less time and energy put into it. That's being more productive. But productive just means, you know, achieving some sort of desired result or experience. If you go on a vacation to relax and you don't relax, that's an unproductive vacation.
Yes.
If you try to meditate but don't meditate, that's unproductive. So people, again, think about, I understand it, that people think about productivity means busy, working harder, working longer, you know. And for some people, it might. I don't know. That's up to them in terms of what they're trying to produce. Are you trying to produce relaxation, happiness, quality of life? Quite frankly, you know, Wharton, I don't know where you are in this game, but many people who get enthralled by GTD and really start to practice it get totally overwhelmed themselves because they get so inspired about how many things they now can produce. And then they start throwing more and taking on more and more. And at some point they go, wait a minute, I'm burning out. Is that GTD? Not if, unless burning out was your goal.
And I've actually been through that process myself. In the beginning, I was like, whoa, I can really do a lot. And I can do a lot by doing this. But I actually got trapped into liking doing more and more and then finding out that was not what it was about. And it's interesting what you say about productivity, because most people would not say, I want to have a productive holiday. They would use some kind of other word. And I know exactly what you mean. And that's why I think the productivity label can sometimes be a misconception for what this is.
If we could have found a different word, we would have used it, but there just isn't one. No language has it. Most languages even have trouble, you know, translating getting things done, or translating mind like water, or translating, you know, next action. Strangely, you know, that stuff that became sort of common sense to be in many of the different languages and the books in 30 languages out there have trouble, you know, translating some of this stuff.
And I think your background in martial arts, but also your concept of mind like water, is actually a really important component of this. Can you explain what mind like water means? And
I stole that from the martial arts, Bruce Lee's sensei that trained him, taught Bruce about be like water, be as that flexible, but as powerful as water is. And water is totally appropriate to its environment. It doesn't overreact, doesn't underreact. And it's quite fluid and quite flexible. So the whole idea of having mind like water is having a mind that doesn't over or underreact to anything. You're dealing with stuff in present tense. But if you're distracted by a meeting that went south this morning, it's hard to be present with your kids. It's hard to be present cooking spaghetti. You know, that's not a mind like water state. So mind like water simply says, are you present? Are you present with whatever you're doing? And you decide what you want to do by being present, and you decide how you want to use the space that it creates for you. Some people use it to be more creative. Some people use it to be more strategic. A lot of people use it just to be more present. I coached a senior executive, actually head of a large global organization. And he said, David, my presenting issue is when I go home with my young kids on the weekend, I do not want to bring this organization with me. To be able to watch your girl play soccer or football without being on your iPhone, those are a lot of the ahas that people start to implement this, that start to experience. They go, wow, this is really more about quality of life than just being busier.
Exactly. So the connection you also made to mindfulness before was that in order to have a good mindfulness experience, it's literally about obviously focusing on your breathing, but the more you get disturbed by your own thoughts, or you know, your attention gets carried away, then the harder that is. And one of the key ways actually to support your mind of not being distracted too much is to get everything out of your head and not be worried about, am I forgetting this or I need to remember this and so on. And I think getting things done as a methodology actually supports that mindful experience you can have then.
Yeah, well said.
A lot of people are attracted to productivity tools, and there are certain types of people, and I might actually be even one of those types. What do you think attracts people to productivity tools in general?
I don't know. If you like to cook, aren't you attracted to cool kitchen gear?
Yes, I am.
One of my many jobs back in those days was working in a construction for a construction company, doing all kinds of stuff. And man, just don't let me into a hardware store, because I would come out with bags of cool tools. Right? So I think, cool tools, depending on, if you're into as somebody described GTD as knowledge work athletics. It's right here are the moves you need to take to be able to then make sure you're managing your thinking process, optimally. And so any tools that facilitate managing the thinking process, just in the last 10 days, here's a new tool, the Remarkable Pad, that I'm just experimenting with to see, because it gives you really the touch and feel of paper, but at the same time, it's digital. And so you can send this, PDF this, you can do whatever. And I still don't know. Jury's out with that. And right before I talk to you, there's a company that's now designing training programs using these.
Ah, virtual reality glasses, yes.
So there's another tool. I'm always fascinated by, if what you want is to be able to be more creative or be clearer, any kind of tool that helps you do that, I'm for that. Of course, my buy to use ratio is about 10 to 1.
Yes.
Because, a lot of this stuff it's kind of a cool idea in concept, but, the trick is, are you still using it 2 months from now? And if not, it probably didn't quite match to what you really needed and how you really move and work.
For getting things done as a methodology, I use OneNote as my preferred tool. It's very simple, actually. I know there are apps that can be used and you can optimize and you can do a lot of things, but it actually really works for me. And whether it's on my iPhone or on my desktop, or whether I write things down on a piece of paper and then put it into OneNote later, it actually really works for me. And I think whatever works, I discovered that somebody had used it on OneNote and wrote a blog about it, and I just copied that and it worked well for me. I like experimenting with new things, but I always return back to the OneNote because it works well for me.
Anything that's a list manager will basically manages a huge amount of this. You could do it all on Evernote. I know people that are huge Evernote fans, and same, very similar to OneNote, how you could use that. It's so open-ended, and you create your own heuristic about how it's organized and so forth. And that's great. That's kind of, I don't know how long, it took me about 6 months to feel comfortable with how to organize all my Evernote notes. And we're just migrating into 365 right now. So I'm going to be experimenting with OneNote myself, because we've been moving from IBM Notes, where I've been keeping my list before. So I still have that exploration to do as well. And so a lot of these things take a little while to get comfortable with the formula that I've got that works for me. So I don't have to keep thinking about the system. I'm just using the system. So all these things have a little bit of an investment time. Some of them a lot.
Yes.
to try to figure that out.
So What Monkeys Do is a podcast about change. And many of our listeners would like to implement a change in their life. And I guess it requires sometimes two things. One, it requires more time. And I guess getting things done can help getting an overview of what are you spending your time on, and eliminate some things, or you say that's not important, or this is more important than others. And then it is a system to keep focusing on what is important. And I guess getting things done can also do that. If we take a person who is just using a little bit of notes for buying groceries, and maybe a to-do list, and maybe having an email list and so on, if a person wants to use getting things done, what should be the first step, do you think?
Well, as I mentioned before, the first step is to have just a good capture tool. so that you, wherever you are, no matter when you are or wherever you are, you've got a place you can capture stuff. And most of my capture is low tech.
Yes. So it's a notepad.
So there's my notepad today. You know, I've got two things. Those were handled. There's one new thing on here. I haven't transferred that into my system yet, but I was doing other things, but I need to be able to grab this when it happened. So I have this on my desk. I have this in my pocket. Pen, little paper. God knows when lightning's going to strike and you know, an idea occurs and input comes in that I need to think I might want to do something about. So having a good ubiquitous, meaning always with you or always somewhere that you can write stuff down. I've coached, you know, couples I've coached, you know, homemakers, you know, that they need to make sure that they've got a notepad in the kitchen because they're trying to keep track of two young kids in the living room playing on the floor. And they suddenly realize, boom, they need to have a place they can go get that out of their head, you know. And so capture tool, and most of mine is low tech. You could capture high tech if you want. You know, I have a capture tool on my iPhone. But again, you have to click it. There are too many clicks that I have to do. And then I have to then make sure I get it out of there again. So that's actually, you know, a lot more work than just low tech capture. And capture is not organized. Capture is just to get the stuff out. And that's the first thing that people need to have is some capture tool and then an in tray, you know, a physical in basket. You know, here's mine. You know, it's right here.
Yeah, that's a physical.
Two things in it, because God knows. I mean, we're still getting paper, guys. Don't kid yourself. You're still getting physical mail. You're still getting things you need to print out and then decide what to do with them.
So the first step is to find a place where you can capture things when you get an idea or an action you need to remind yourself to do, or you need to, by the way, I need to call Peter to do this, or I need to call Pia to do that, or whatever. So that's the first step, is to find a tool that works that you have with you all the time.
Yeah. And if you really wanted to implement the process, then use that tool. Or frankly, if I were coaching somebody, I'd get them to get a big stack of paper, make sure they have a physical end basket, a big stack of printer paper, and get them to empty their head one idea per page and throw that into their in tray. And that's different than what you would have once you get the system started. And then, you know, like, yes, you need it. Like I have just these ubiquitous tools that are available all the time. But just if you're implementing the process to begin with, you probably need some place more than just these little notepads to dump everything out of your head as best you can. Yeah, that'll anywhere will work as long as you work it. So, you know, some sort of a notepad. So that'd be the first thing to do. So you just want to keep going as long as it goes. And that could be, you know, as long as it takes. I've had it take up to 2 or 3 days with some executives that I've worked with just to empty it all and get it all out. But even if you just take 10 minutes to do that, it'll help. So you don't have to do some major project, but just to whatever degree you do that, is just start to externalize those things. Then step two is train yourself to think, what's the next action about any of those that you actually need to do something about? And make those decisions about those things. And then have a list manager somewhere that you can keep track of, you know, what do I need to be reminded of? If nothing else, it's a simple next action list.
But that would probably still give you a list of 200 potential to-dos. And how do you then go from there to what should I do now?
Well, come on. If anybody keeps a grocery list, they're already doing that, right? Oh, that's something I need to buy at the store. That goes over here in that list. Here's an errand I need to run. Here goes over that in my list. Here's a call I need to make. Goes over here in that calls list. So just organize those things based upon the context that makes sense to you. These are things to do when I'm wired or when I have a digital access, where you could do it off your iPhone or your laptop or your iPad or whatever. You might have all of those on one list. If you have a whole lot, then yeah, sometimes it makes more sense to sort those into ways that make it a little easier to manage them, because a lot of them you couldn't do right now anyway, because you're not where you could do them. You're not going out for errands. You don't need to look at your errands list. You don't need to have that disturb you.
Yes. So it's actually breaking down that long list into other lists, some where you do it when you have you need to phone, some you need to do errands, some you need to do on your computer, some you need to do when you're out buying groceries or something. So you have different lists.
Yeah. And you just need some sort of tool, and then you just make sure you need to look at the tool and review it and keep it current, so that then your brain doesn't have to keep reminding you about anything.
So you have obviously implemented this with hundreds, maybe even thousands of people over the years, and you have coached them. So you've literally sat next to them as they've been implementing this. If you look back and think of some of the most let's use the word successful in using this tool. What have they been successful with? There must be a hump at some point where some people, they look at it and say, well, it's too much bother for me. And others have continued and really been successful with it. What has been the difference, do you think, between those who really used it well?
Oh, just legions of testimonials we've gotten over the last 35 years. They range from a guy who attributes this to curing himself of cancer, all the way to Howard Stern, this big entertainment guy in the U.S. that said it changed his life, gave him room to learn how to paint, as well as keep all of his entertainment businesses going. So, you know, it just rained. However people have decided to do that. But for most people, it would say it totally changed the quality of their life.
And did they do something? I mean, I guess what I'm trying to ask is, did they do something in particular that made it work well for them? I mean, did they use a particular system, or did they look at it every day, or did they, or was it literally just, you know, that they decided to use it and then they made it work for them?
I don't know. It ranged all over. You don't have to do, you could do any little part of this. You know, I had the major Hollywood producer, probably one of the most successful you'd ever know, who just read my book and said, I just got the next action concept, and it allowed him to create movies a whole lot faster and a whole lot more successfully than ever did. It's just that one thing. I roll with that, you know, and that really worked. So whatever it did, it created more space and more of a sense of focus and control. And then people have used that and for whatever way they've done that to do whatever they were doing themselves.
I guess what I just took from that was, because I had probably seen it as a methodology that here are five steps and here are the steps in the steps and this is how you do it. And what I guess what you're saying is, if you just do any of it, that might even help you. And if that works for you, good luck with that. I mean, that works well for you. So if emptying your head, you know, somewhere and that works, well done. And if it's the whole methodology, well, that works for you. So it's really bits and pieces or all of it.
It's not running with scissors.
No, exactly. Okay, that's perfect.
It's all good stuff. That said, if you really want to taste how cool it is to have nothing on your mind other than whatever you're focusing on, you really do need to implement the whole methodology.
Because that's what I did. I took the whole thing, and it probably was good that I didn't know that I could just take parts of it, but I took the whole thing, and I think it was the whole thing that worked well for me. Because it was also having, you know, a quarterly review and think about, am I heading right in terms of my five-year plan, or connecting that to the day-to-day. And that worked really well for me to have the whole plan implemented. I guess the thing is that once you start on it, you need to continue to do it every day, because otherwise you get a backlog of things. And that maybe sounds a little bit too regular, but it is something that you need to keep maintaining.
Yeah, well, you need to keep maintaining it if what you want to do is get rid of your addiction to ambient anxiety. See, that's the biggest problem most people have, is they get sort of excited with this, but then they fall off because it moves them into a more relaxed state than they're used to. And if you're talking about habit change, your biggest limiter to habit change is your comfort zone, is what are you familiar with, right? And so the comfort zone can keep you coming back to the ambient anxiety unless you change that, unless you raise the bar internally about what you're willing to tolerate. Are you willing to tolerate waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning about something? Are you willing to tolerate having your ideas about stuff keep banging around in your head without making any progress on them? You know, are you willing to tolerate the subtle stress that starts to build in people where they're feeling overwhelmed? And any one thing in your life, especially if it's a strategic thing, should we get divorced? Should we adopt? Should I, you know, how do I handle bankruptcy? How do I, whatever. Any one of those things that you haven't applied this methodology with will color your whole life that dark gray. It'll make everything feel overwhelming. Everything feel overwhelming. So that's why I say, you know, just getting this methodology down as a way to approach whatever then takes up space in your life and understanding how to engage with that appropriately. That's not a one-time event. I just turned 75. I've been doing this for 40, 35 years anyway, to some degree. And I'm not going to stop. Why should I? I like being present. it makes life a lot better.
I think that's a fantastic note to end this. I want to say thank you very much, David, for taking the time to speak about getting things done. I have to admit that I am a converted person already in that sense. I've also adapted it quite a lot to my own needs, but I think it works well for me. And I just want to say to everyone listening that you should have a look at it and see what it can do to you, because getting things out of your head and not being stressed with that is actually a total relief. So thanks a lot for your time, and thanks a lot for your input on this.
My pleasure, Martin. Thanks for the invitation. This was fun.
Thanks. What a great interview. I took three things away from my talk with David. One, productivity is really just about doing what is most important to you. I think personal productivity has got a bad name. To many, it either means to be more efficient at work, or measuring everything, or trying to achieve. And that's not what it's about at all. It's really just making sure that you're prioritizing what you think are the most important stuff in your life. And that has rarely anything to do with being more productive at work. Two, get stuff out of your head. David Allen has a saying that your mind is for having ideas, not holding them. He believes that we should empty our minds, capture it all, and then start doing the tasks that matters most to us, instead of just thinking about them. In fact, a lot of what keeps us awake at night, or what gets us all stressed out, is that we desperately are trying to keep stuff in our heads. We can't, and we shouldn't. And that's why David's most important advice in this interview was to get all your stuff out of your head. And three, find out what works for you. David has designed this whole system. And this identifies how to capture stuff and how to sort it and how to manage tasks, etc. But that system may not work for all. In fact, he suggests that you find a system that works for you and then follow that. And that's a great advice. And this is coming from a person who actually lives off selling a particular system. But one thing he does suggest for all of us to do is to get stuff out of our head. Getting things done is a world bestseller, and with good reason. If you're interested in personal productivity, you really should read it. If you prefer to watch videos, then he has made a number of TED Talks which are worth watching. The one I will recommend is called The Art of Stress-Free Productivity. Until next time, take care.